This is ESPN Radio's Barton Hahn Podcast.
Kane and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio with day two of our Senior Bowl coverage. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty staring up at TV screens watching Jordan Cornette, Greg McElroy, Cole Kublik, and the rest of the guys down there at the Senior Bowl. Another day of distraction certainly coming our way, Chris.
Yeah, Gojo, we're going to have to petition the higher-ups to see if we can get down to Mobile and hang out with Jim Nagy during the Senior Bowl festivities and watch the practices and all of that stuff, man. I feel like we have a lot of value to add to that production.
Hey, listen, I think especially in the trenches, we have seen there has been an increased demand by the public for some big boy talk around here. It's been the year of the Fix Six. And so Chris, we're company guys. We want to give the people what they want. Serve the viewer is the thing all over ESPN. So we can do that.
No doubt about it. Plus, I'm 6'8", 330 pounds, so if you're looking for comparables, if you want to see how big a guy actually is, having him stand next to me would give you an idea of how well that's going to play once he steps up to the next level.
That is a great call, Chris. The way in like basketball arenas, they used to put Shaq standing up with like his arms outstretched so people could come over and see how they stacked up here. We'll just do that with you and draft hopefuls and humble them very quickly that this is now big boy football you're stepping into.
Exactly. Kind of like when I stepped onto a training camp field for the Dallas Cowboys and I was lining up in a three technique between Larry Allen and Flozell Adams.
Oh, heavens.
Good luck with that, rookie.
Oh, God. Yeah, no. So that is real life coming at you fast in the NFL. So plenty of updates, I'm sure, as we get distracted by the Senior Bowl as the day goes along here. We got news around Jim Harbaugh heading back to college football. We got to take a look at one of the unlikely NBA success stories so far this season, but Chris, this day still starts off with the world as it circulates in the NFL around Brian Flores and the allegations in a lawsuit against the NFL. And we know his former team, the team that he was the head coach for in the Miami Dolphins, was at the center of some same but different allegations regarding them paying him allegedly to lose football games in an effort to tank. Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross responded late Wednesday night to those allegations to the lawsuit, calling them, quote, false, malicious, and defamatory, and promising to defend his personal integrity as well as that of the organization. And Chris, with all of this now circling around the Dolphins' job, we heard from Chris Mortensen, our ESPN NFL insider, the NFL is going to investigate this. But right now, who the hell are the Dolphins going to get to coach this team? Because it's still one of the vacant jobs left in the market.
Yeah, maybe David Culley might be interested in this. We see that he's unwilling to sign up for a one-year situation where the organization is a disaster, completely dysfunctional. But with all kidding aside, Gojo, this job is radioactive. I don't know who would want to step in to this situation given how the Dolphins treated Brian Flores, and the reason that they gave for dismissing him was poor collaboration. And now, based on the allegations that he spelled out in his lawsuit, it stems back to 2019, his first year as the head coach, where he refused to accept the proposition or the incentive from ownership that he would be given $100,000 per game loss in an effort to improve their draft position. No coach wants to step into a situation where the organization wants to undermine the purpose of everybody in the building, which is to win as many football games as you possibly can in any given season. So for a head coach to want to take on that responsibility and knowing that if it doesn't work out, you might not necessarily get another opportunity, it just doesn't seem like the likely spot for a candidate that could potentially have options, if not in this hiring cycle, in future hiring cycles. So the person that takes this job for the Dolphins has got to be somebody that's desperate, somebody that's probably a position coach, not necessarily a coordinator, somebody that's not on the precipice of being considered for an NFL head coaching vacancy anytime soon.
Yeah, Chris, you were right to speak David Culley's name into this conversation. He was exactly that kind of candidate last year when it came to the Houston Texans job, because this is just the next level of the Houston Texans. This is a job that is equally as toxic and radioactive right now. Because, Chris, you talked about yesterday the pressure that might be on Brian Daboll and that Giants organization heading into this year where now they've been one of the teams implicated in all of this. Imagine being the Dolphins head coach that has to step in after Brian Flores, who gave you back-to-back winning seasons for the Dolphins for the first time since the early 2000s. You're talking about a standard there, along with having to continue to groom Tua Tagovailoa, who's going to be on his second head coach and maybe as many coordinators in that many years. Good luck to whoever steps into that, because, Chris, it seems like not only an impossible task, but also, speaking of Tua, probably a death sentence on the early portion of his career. Like, this reeks of Josh Rosen style, what we heard about Daniel Jones style mismanaging of a young prospect at that spot.
Oh, no doubt. And you spelled it out before. You said that Tua would have to be an otherworldly talent in order to overcome the deficiencies of the organization, a dysfunction in hiring and firing coaches and offensive coordinators, and all the strange things that they've done in Miami. John Mara talked about doing everything that they could to ruin Daniel Jones. The Miami Dolphins ain't far behind with Tua. But the one thing I will say that makes this situation slightly different than the Giants is that you still have a figure in Chris Greer that's in position in that front office that's responsible for, in part, moving on from Brian Flores. So whatever coach that they hire, if it doesn't work out, if you don't see the early returns, I think there's going to be far more pressure on Chris Greer as a figure in all of this as opposed to the head coach that's hired, because he recognizes that he's inheriting a situation where the organization has proven itself to be dysfunctional. The first coach that they had in the last 20 years to have back-to-back winning seasons, they fired him for quote-unquote poor collaboration. Gojo, there's only one way to read that if you look between the lines. It has to be because Brian Flores didn't go along with the organization's plans on losing games, and he didn't go along with Stephen Ross's request, allegedly, to meet with Tom Brady on a yacht and try to entertain him and lure him down to South Beach in order to play quarterback for his team, knowing that there's the Michigan connection. So that's the part of this that doesn't make sense. Stephen Ross has shown himself to be a good businessman, but one of the worst owners in the National Football League. And Chris Greer, in terms of where he ranks with general managers, he's certainly not amongst the best. And as he continues down this path, this course of action in getting rid of a coach the caliber of Brian Flores, I think that's an indictment on who he is and how he does his job.
Yeah, Chris, what you brought up there, I think, is kind of at the core of all of this, too. And it was something Mike Locksley joined the guys on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning. Mike Locksley, who, in addition to being the Maryland head football coach right now, is also the founder of the National Coalition of Minority Football Coaches. And he was asked about if African-American head coaches are put in positions to fail. And this is what he had to say.
Yeah, that seems to have been the deal, and that's where it's the dog chasing its tail, because you're given those opportunities at really tough places and expected to get it done in a short period of time. Sometimes we are given these opportunities where the deck is already stacked against us in terms of having success, and kind of continues this trend that, oh, we can't get it done because we've taken some of these jobs in it, and when we fail and fail miserably, you know, I heard Hugh talking the other day on ESPN. And when you fail miserably, all it does is it adds to that commentary that we can't lead programs. We can't lead and have great success as minority coaches, and that's not true.
And again, the optics going back to that really feels like what's going to be at the heart of this when we have a conversation about what we heard from Hugh Jackson on the morning show today with the guys. We'll get to all of that because, again, this is not going to go away. We know these allegations are very serious, and as we start to see the responses pour in from Stephen Ross, the NFL, and others, we'll try and gauge what this looks like on the other side. We'll do that coming up in about 30 seconds here, the reaction around the rest of the league to what we've seen from Miami and what this job looks like going forward. We're going to get to all that here on Canty and Golic Jr. after this word from Wendy's. All right, guys, right now at Wendy's, see what all the hype's about with their new guaranteed hot and crispy fries. We're talking real natural cut potatoes, perfectly sprinkled in sea salt, and guaranteed to be hot and crispy, down to the very last fry. Or they'll replace them. These aren't just the typical fries you add to a meal. No, no, no. These are fries worth adding a meal to. So abandon the old, cold, and soggy, and head on down to Wendy's today, where your fries are guaranteed to be hot and crispy at participating U.S. Wendy's.
Brian Flores, the former Miami Dolphins head coach, and his attorneys filed a lawsuit today that alleges racism in hiring.
The playing field is not leveled. It's not level at the bottom rings of coaching, and it's also not level at the top.
I know one very qualified black coach who almost refused to interview this week because he really felt he was being used.
This was a great day of sacrifice for Coach Flores.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. For more on the reaction around the league to Brian Flores' lawsuit and the allegations against the NFL and several teams, we head to the hotline to talk to Jonathan Jones, CBS senior NFL reporter, who joins us now. Jonathan, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me on.
No, we appreciate you giving us some time today. And let's start with responses. We've heard some from the different organizations involved in this. We saw the NFL put out a statement, but then also had reports in here that there was going to be an investigation into some of the allegations surrounding the Dolphins. What have you heard as far as what we can expect overall as the response from the league to what Brian Flores had here?
Yeah, so far what we have from the league is in my opinion, a very poor statement that came out a little too quickly, if that was ultimately what was going to be the statement. And what really kind of tripped me and a number of folks up was the last statement in that statement that said that Brian Flores' lawsuit and claims had no merit. Well, you know, it's a 56-page document, and there are a lot of claims in there across multiple organizations, and also including Bill Belichick. What people knew, when they knew it, all of those things that you can't possibly know at that point. And so now it appears that the league has leaked to various insiders covering the league that actually, hey, we are going to investigate the very serious claim about the alleged $100,000 per loss that Stephen Ross is willing to pay Brian Flores. But we're still not hearing anything from the league in as it relates to the Rooney Rule claims and alleged violation by the New York Giants. And this is a very serious allegation because you know, the NFL sets these policies. They monitor these policies. They're very proud of the adjustments and tweaks they've made to these policies, and they also have to enforce them. And so by them getting a credible claim and saying it has no merit mere moments after the lawsuit is filed did not sit right with me.
Jonathan, we know the reaction in the court of public opinion, media, and fans overwhelmed support for Brian Flores in his class action lawsuit, but what's been the reaction around the National Football League when it comes to the specific allegations surrounding the Miami Dolphins?
As it relates specifically to the Dolphins, it's been a fascinating response, right? It has been, well, you know, everyone sort of wants to know what is the evidence, right? I was talking with a source earlier today and, okay, B-Flow, what can you prove here? Are there text messages? Are there documents? Is there some sort of contemporaneous note that was taken? If I can borrow a phrase from former FBI Director James Comey, like how is he going to prove that he was offered this? And there's an NFL Network report out there that there is at least one witness who can corroborate it. That will be helpful to Brian Flores' case most certainly. But the NFL very much has to take this extremely seriously because when the NFL decided to get in bed with sports gaming and betting, as many, many organizations have done, you know, this was a risk that they ran. And when they allow teams and the owners of these teams to invest in sports gambling companies, as Stephen Ross, among others, have done, you have to do everything you can to avoid the perception of the integrity of the game being called into question. Well, that's exactly what's being done right here with this claim, and the league is forced to investigate it.
Canty and Golic Jr. talking to CBS Sports senior NFL reporter Jonathan Jones on the hotline. Staying with that Miami job that is still vacant, what's the perception around the league about that head coaching opening now?
Well, you know, I think a lot of folks, if you're Kellen Moore or if you're Mike McDaniel, the two guys who appear to be the leading candidates for that job opportunity, you probably just want to take a quick breather, right? You want to see, okay, let's see how some of this is going to play out. And then on top of everything else, hey, you know, the Miami Dolphins hadn't had consecutive winning seasons in nearly two decades. And once they finally do that, once they go 4-2 in the last 3 years under Brian Flores against the New England Patriots, if they just, you know, got off to a slightly better start this past year, that, you know, it's a little weird that you fire a successful on-the-field head coach. And it's a little strange that you fire him because he didn't have very nice bedside manner, right? He as the myth, and I've called them myths coming out of South Florida, and he kind of talks about being the angry black man that he has been portrayed as. I'll tell you this. Once he got fired, I spoke with someone who knows Brian Flores, who said, listen, he's a guy, do you want to win or do you want to hug? And if this is an organization that ultimately fires people because he didn't pat somebody on the back hard enough for a good job, there are some issues with that organization, even though they have some fantastic pieces in place to obviously win.
Jonathan, Brian Flores said he's optimistic about being a head coach in the National Football League. Again, he's rumored to be a finalist with the Houston Texans coaching vacancy. How much interest is Brian Flores getting with these remaining vacancies? Do you anticipate him potentially being hired, if not in this hiring cycle, in a future hiring cycle in the National Football League?
Yeah, I see the reports about how he is a finalist for the Houston Texans job. You know, guys, what we sort of know about whistleblowers in America, you know, they don't really get opportunities to go regain their employment at the place that they blew the whistle. What we know about folks, black men who speak out against the power dynamics and structures in the NFL, well, you don't have to go back too far to remember Colin Kaepernick's deal and how he never got back in the league. It's a slightly different with Brian Flores as opposed to, you know, an average starting NFL quarterback, I suppose, but he can be hopeful, but he also filed this lawsuit and he said so in his prepared statement. He knows good and well that this could very much end his NFL coaching career just a few weeks before he even turns 41. Is that fair? Of course not. Do I agree with it? Of course not. And I don't think anyone that I'm speaking to right now does agree with that. Especially if these allegations are deemed to be true, but it's going to take some time to figure out if they're true. And so for me, when I hear the reports that the Houston Texans are seriously still considering Brian Flores as a finalist, I will believe it when Cal McNair has Brian Flores up there in a press conference with the head coach who happens to still be suing not just the NFL and three other franchises, but if somebody comes in with some more evidence against the Houston Texans for discriminatory practices, the Houston Texans could then be sued by the head coach that they just fired.
That would be a wild even by NFL standards, as we're talking to CBS Sports senior NFL reporter Jonathan Jones. Jonathan, I guess point blank, if it's not Brian Flores, then in Houston, with the remaining openings that we have right now, do you think we'll see a black head coach hired during this cycle?
I'm honestly not sure. And this is something I remember talking about this with folks around the league right after the regular season ended. And, you know, it was hard to imagine. You thought, okay, Todd Bowles is going to get a job. You looked at Jacksonville and Byron Leftwich, and that's a disaster down there, right? You think what Raheem Morris did to end out the season, what he did in the playoffs. Okay, maybe he's going to get a true look. D'Amico Ryan's continuing on. But right now, as we have filled the vacancies so far with white men, you look at maybe the leading candidates. I look at New Orleans, and I think Aaron Glenn, the current defensive coordinator of the Lions, he might have a shot. But, man, Dennis Allen looks like the leading candidate in New Orleans. And then you look at Miami, and there's Kellen Moore, and there's Mike McDaniel, who is biracial, even though by, you know, traditional, and I say this as a black man, by traditional American standards, he does not appear to be black, but he is certainly biracial, and he is proud of his heritage. But outside of those two men, I don't know, and those two teams, I'm not entirely sure that we're going to see it. And if we do not, it's going to be 0-9, and that is going to be a terrible, awful, horrendous look for the league.
Certainly going to be tough for the league to try and stomach, especially in the midst of all these allegations. That's a lot of what we have to keep an eye on right now, unfortunately. Jonathan, we wish it was for something more enjoyable to talk about here, but we appreciate you giving us the time and the insight on this. Thank you.
Hey, appreciate it, guys.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Now, coming up next, we heard it referenced by Mike Locksley before, but Hugh Jackson, the former head coach of the Cleveland Browns and the current head football coach at Grambling, joined the guys on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning to talk about what he has now come out with, alleging about his time with the Cleveland Browns. We will hear those comments from Hugh Jackson coming up next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Bart and Han.
The plan was presented to Hugh Jackson after he was already hired as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns, and it was presented to him as a bonus.
I didn't understand the process. I didn't understand what that plan was. And I asked for clarity. I asked, what is this? Because it did not talk about winning and losing until year 3 and 4.
When the team has made a decision, the higher ups have decided that they are going to go into some sort of draft capital accumulation and losing slash tanking strategy. They bring in the black coach.
Kanty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And that last part we heard from Dominique Foxworth in the open, our ESPN NFL analyst, it really seems to be where we have settled in the last couple of days, Chris, with the allegations in the lawsuit from Brian Flores and the comments that we'll get to from Hugh Jackson in the morning show. It all seems to center around that idea, right, that as we go and assess the landscape, we talk about perception being reality in a lot of cases. And for the NFL and a league that's had a difficulty and certainly a very poor history with hiring minority head coaching candidates, there is now the growing perception based off what we've heard that you are bringing in black head coaches to essentially be involved in a controlled burn before you do the winning with its white counterpart that follows.
Yeah, Dominique was way too real in his commentary, and that's the piece that not a lot of people out there in the sports world really want to accept. Fans don't want to hear that NFL teams aren't trying to prioritize winning in every single instance, in every single season. And sometimes when you're going through a rebuild or you're going through what the Houston Texans went through last year, the controversy surrounding Deshaun Watson and him being at a stalemate at odds with the organization, or what we saw from the Cleveland Browns in 2016 and 2017, when it was clear that Sacha Brown and Paul DePodesta weren't trying to win, they were just trying to accumulate draft picks, even going as far as trading down some of the higher picks that they had in years prior in order to make sure that they could position themselves for number one picks in back-to-back years. We saw that, and we saw the benefit of that. We saw the return on investment in the way of Myles Garrett and Baker Mayfield, so their scheme worked for the organization. It just didn't work out for Hugh Jackson. Now, Miami tried a similar scheme with Brian Flores, allegedly, but Brian Flores was too good of a coach and in back-to-back years had a winning season and ultimately didn't result in the team necessarily having the franchise quarterback that they had wanted. And they were looking at the 2019 year as the reason why they couldn't find themselves on solid footing moving forward, just because Brian Flores was doing so much winning that the team wouldn't be in the top 10 to be able to draft a franchise quarterback in the future. So in all of these instances, there is that common thread of the organization undermining what the head coach's job is supposed to be, which is winning games, as many games as he possibly can.
And so that's what's been called into question yet again by Hugh Jackson now, the former Cleveland Browns and current Grambling head football coach. Joined the guys on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max this morning, and among other things talked about how his situation was different but similar to what Brian Flores dealt with. He brought up a number of incentives in his contract that he believed were tied to things that did not sustain winning football. And he was asked about what him and his agent looked at in the contract. He referenced specifically about $750,000 of bonuses tied to things like having the youngest roster, tied to things like the amount of draft picks that they had. And this is what Hugh had to say about that situation.
We went through it, and I think he was surprised by it. Because, again, this is not total football. When you're talking about how young a team would be, when you're talking about how many draft picks, I don't have any control over how many draft picks. I don't have any control over how young a team would be. That's just the way it is. You know, anytime, you know, I've asked for the report once this particular money was deposited. I mean, what is this? How do we get to this? How is this number being deposited into my account? And no one could ever explain it other than this is what was earned.
Chris, what'd you make of that?
I mean, Hugh Jackson, if you're going to come out with details, if you're going to come out with facts accusing the organization of this plan that didn't involve doing any kind of high-level winning your first couple of years on the job, then you've got to spell out a little more details. You've got to be clear in terms of what the actual agenda was, and you've got to give specifics. But then you've also, when you're trying to draw the parallel with the Brian Flores situation, you got to say exactly what those incentives are, and you can't, you know, be vague or ambiguous about what it was that Jimmy Haslam or Sacha Brown or Paul DePodesta wanted you to do. It has to be spelled out just so it can be in alignment with what we've seen with Brian Flores for consistency's sake, so you could have a legitimate argument against the team and how they essentially undercut you as your as the head coach. So I hear where Hugh Jackson is coming from. I'm hoping that he has more receipts, but it didn't necessarily sound like he was, you know, absolutely sure in his role in all of this in terms of what the organization was actually paying him bonuses for. And that's the part that's a little bit surprising for me, because he gave a specific dollar figure, but he didn't spell out exactly what the bonus was for.
No, and he had talked about going to arbitration with the NFL while he was still a coach. Remember, him and the head of his foundation said they raised these claims with the league when he was still employed with all this, Chris, because you're right. There's a far difference between Brian Flores saying, I was offered $100,000 for every loss while I was a Dolphins head coach, and Hugh Jackson saying, hey, you know what? I was paid bonuses that I also tried to reject because I wanted things to go better for the team and all this. Like, Chris, there is still and can still be plenty wrong with that situation for Hugh, right? Like, you look at him. He was the coach there for 2 years prior to the season that he was let go in the middle of that year. If you were to tell me, Chris, that there was a plan, because we knew what the Cleveland Browns were doing. We knew what the Dolphins, I mean, we were all shouting tank for Tua in our seats heading into that draft for the Dolphins when they were trying to get the former Alabama star. But we always know there's a difference between the front office and the actual players and coaches doing all this. And you could tell me the front office had a plan. And they were going to, in the middle of all that, make sure Hugh Jackson was taken care of to see the other side of that. But that's just it. If you're knowing, hey, there's a four-year stretch where we're probably not going to be good, and then you're fired for not being good enough, that tends to be an issue. And you could even go a step further, Chris, and say, well, remember, he didn't get along very well with Baker Mayfield. We even saw the bad blood when Hugh Jackson left and took an advisor job with the Bengals during that season when he was unemployed. And you could say, all right, well, maybe this is another instance that we're seeing in hindsight. The Browns siding with Baker Mayfield over X person in that spot, probably not the best business strategy, but that's still then another bridge you got to go to pay for loss in what's being insinuated.
Yeah, the friction between Hugh Jackson and Baker Mayfield is the cop-out if you're the Cleveland Browns organization. But ultimately, you allowed Hugh Jackson to be the face of all the losing and absolve the front office of any blame in the eyes of the fan base or in the eyes of the media when it comes to the ineptitude that the organization experienced over that three-year span. So that's what happened to Hugh. He was scapegoated. And based on what he's alleging, it's unfair what happened to him, and all of us know exactly what the front office was planning, but the fact that they didn't let him see it through is what the egregious part in all of this is. It's really the shameful part. It's the underbelly of the National Football League. It really is unfortunate, because when you start looking at the strategy that they employed, Sashi Brown and Paul DePodesta, keep it in mind, DePodesta is a baseball guy. I mean, the strategy they employed is similar to what we see from bottom-feeding baseball teams when you're so bad for so long and you accumulate a bunch of draft picks. And, oh, by the way, when you go with younger players as opposed to veteran players, it's a lot cheaper when it comes to pay scale and your overall payroll. That's exactly what the Cleveland Browns did in 2016 and 2017. And that's why they were able to stockpile all of that cap space, all of those draft picks, and that's how they became a team that was capable of making the playoffs in the 2020 season and had these lofty expectations coming into 2021. That was all a result of the plan that was implemented earlier this decade in 2015, 2016, 2017. It's unfortunate that Hugh Jackson wasn't a part of the successes, the fruit of that, the decisions that were made. But that's the position that black coaches are put in all too often. And I think that's what Hugh and Brian Flores are trying to blow the whistle on.
Yeah, we can go back and look, because I think there's a couple other examples of other coaches that are in similar situations that weren't quite the same that I think could underscore some of the frustration we have heard from black head coaches on this front. We'll get to plenty more of that coming up in a little bit. We got plenty of time to discuss that here on Canty and Golic Jr. But coming up next, we're going to have to talk about another head coaching vacancy in the NFL and a surprise turn in an interview that went a very unexpected way yesterday. That's next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
In 1920, halfback Fritz Pollard led the Akron Pros to a championship in the newly formed National Football League. The next season, he accepted the role of player coach, becoming the first black head coach in NFL history. today, his impact is felt through the Fritz Pollard Alliance, an organization advocating for diversity in coaching and front office positions.
ESPN Radio celebrates Black History Always. Bart and Han.
Mike Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, as we sit up here and watch yet another day of Senior Bowl practice on ESPN2 in front of us, I am reminded of like the one universal truth that I remember about football, which is among the things that you got to do, especially in the middle of two-a-days that are really unpleasant in the middle of all this, there is nothing quite as bad as that second round of stretches go on a two-a-day where you got to go back out there and go through stretch lines for that second time when the soreness has already set in.
Yeah, and you know your body hates you when you're going through that, bro. Like, it's just, it's one of those things that you know is not going to feel good. And it takes you so much longer to get your mind right, get prepared. Like getting your ankles taped, putting your pads on, all of that stuff takes a good 30 minutes longer in the second practice just because you're dreading going back out there and going through the feeling that you just described. So I'm with you with that one 100%. And I'm glad that I'm no longer responsible for having to do that. Good on these young men that they still got it in them to do that. I wish them all the best in their careers and moving forward. But that is one thing I do not miss about the National Football League is having to go through those two-a-days.
Oh, cutting your ankle tape and wrist tape off after the first practice, knowing in like an hour and a half, 2 hours, you're going to have to do that again. It just
That's all y'all had? That was the longest break? Two-hour break?
Yeah, I'm embellishing probably a little bit at this point. I don't remember the timeline.
We had that good four-hour block, Ojo. When you went into the hotel room, you turned the AC all the way up, and you got a nice three-hour chunk of sleep. That was gold. Like, it was universal that was the game plan after that first practice to make sure you got as much sleep, as much rest as you possibly could, because you know that afternoon banger under the sun, that was going to be nothing nice. So you needed to rest up. Rest up, and like Steve Smith used to say, ice up, son. Get ready for that one.
I have vivid memories during two-a-days in college of us all in the locker room, everyone laid out on the floor with every screen in the locker room playing the same episode of Maury Povich that we were all watching here. You got to get through it by any means necessary, and sometimes while you're going through it, seeing someone struggle through a paternity test reminds you that some people got it worse at that time here.
I guess that's a fair point. That's a fair point.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN.
Ding, ding, ding.
That's the truth. I'm going to tell you want to see some excited people, man, when three guys find out all at once it's not them. I saw those dudes. I have never seen an end zone dance that can match the joy, the jubilation on those dudes' faces.
The only thing that can match that kind of joy, Gojo, is the last practice in training camp. The feeling that you had on that last one when coach blows that air horn and it's over, and you know from there on out, you ain't got to worry about practicing twice a day? Are you kidding me? Man, you want to talk about somebody that's happy, bruh.
Man, when we knew we were breaking camp, because there's a difference in preseason between getting ready for the first game and when you're still technically in training camp. And every year when we would break camp at Notre Dame, I would come into the locker room and somebody would fire up, "Never Would Have Made It" by Marvin Sapp. And that was when you knew camp was officially over. Chris, you walk in there and you'd see linebackers and guards that had been battling it out all camp, arm in arm, realizing that through the Lord's mercy, they had finally made it through this.
That was the only way that you could make it, man. But it's something about that, Gojo, something about those memories, those experiences. That's the stuff that you miss. Not the practices, don't get me wrong.
No, you don't miss
the practices. But that bonding in the locker room, it's what makes a football locker room special. And it's different. It's one of the most diverse places. It's one of the most special places in our society. I wish that our society could work more like a football locker room, but that would be too idealistic. I know we don't live in a perfect world, but I will say that, Gojo, everybody on the team gets along on that day when they blow the whistle up for that final training camp practice.
Those Gatorades taste a little sweeter when you walk back in that locker room. The cold tub doesn't even sting as much at that point, Chris.
No, and I got to have that purple Gatorade too, Gojo. Yes. I don't know what flavor that was, but that purple Gatorade, I'm talking about that was gold right there.
I want that some
was
of that gold.
That was priceless. There wasn't no amount of money that you could give me to take that purple Gatorade from me. That's how important it was to me on that day.
Some things are bigger than money, Chris. Some things are bigger than basketball, bigger than football at that point when it comes to what you need to get through these tough times. That is what we had going on. That's what these young men are battling through down there in Mobile, because the draft starts in Mobile, as you can see on ESPN2.
But they got money on their mind, Gojo.
That is true.
Like, there's a check on the other side of that they ain't never had a chance to get to. So their feelings about it are a little bit different than the normal training camp. We got to get to this money. There's a bag on the other side of this. And if I ball, I'm going to get paid.
That is so true. The light is at the end of the tunnel, fellas. Go ahead and see it through. Coming up next, though, we'll see if there is any light at the end of the tunnel for one very frustrated NBA star.
Thanks for listening to the Barton Hahn Podcast. You can listen live to Barton Hahn weekdays at noon Eastern on ESPN Radio or stream the video of the show on ESPN+. Bart and Hahn, the podcast.